It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! Welcome to Just a Bit Outside with Stark and Massaro. I am your host, Ian Starkman, and I am joined by my co-host, Mike Massaro. Lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including OT between the Ravens and Vikings. It's a dog day in the NFL with multiple upsets. College football sees closer than anticipated games. The Maple Leafs are hot, and the Raptors start strong. But first, Mike, how was your sports week?
Stark, how are you? Pleasure as always. All yours.
Do you want to mention before we get into anything, I guess, really, we're recording Monday night. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just about at Monday night kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
I got my Justin Fields jersey on, my Bears hat, big night. You know, we're taking down those Steelers. We got a few listeners out there. You know who you are, Gary. You're a Steelers fan, already been chirping me. We'll see how tonight goes. But go on, Mike. Sorry, how was your sports week?
I have to side with Gary on this one. Pretty good. I mean, I took advantage of the nice weather. So for those of you that are in Southern Ontario where we are, or maybe you aren't, we've, you know, had some good weather the past few days. So took advantage of that. I went a couple nice walks with my dog over the weekend. Started my Christmas decoration preparation. I'm not decorating, I'm prepping in the garage, like Santa's workshop.
I gotcha.
The Griswold workshop. Just, you know, prep, just to get ready over the next couple weekends. For me, my rule is I don't do anything before Remembrance Day. After that, I think I've mentioned that. After that, then it's acceptable. So that was really it. Saturday, spent some time outside just doing some odds and ends and cleaning things up, and Sunday I glued myself to my chair and watched a lot of football.
Great spot to be. You know, you said you took your dog for a walk. I'm not a dog guy. Not that I don't like dogs. I just don't have a dog. Never had a dog.
Yet.
Ever. I understand the cuddling and the cuteness and the, you know, man's best friend thing, but the 7 a.m. walks in the December cold and picking up shit off people's lawns, I just... boggles my mind. I don't know if I could get into that.
Some people like to change diapers, I suppose. I don't mind picking up my dog's shit. So there you go.
Touche. So I actually did get out golfing this weekend. Unseasonal weather, I guess is what you would call it here in the GTA. So I was golfing, definitely the last time though. I had a smooth 38 on the front nine. I was playing with my father-in-law. And after nine, you know, we stopped to get a beer and I leaned over to him. And I said, hey, just a heads up. We're on career low watch today right now after nine. And he's like, really? What'd you shoot? I said 39 here. Let's keep it rolling. But I just wanted to give you the heads up if things get a little intense on the back nine, because it was just him and I playing. And, you know, if I stop talking to him, he's going to start thinking something's wrong. So, of course, on the 10th hole, I double bogeyed, so that didn't start off great. And then I bogeyed the last four holes, so nowhere even close to career low, but it was still good getting out and play. You know, we had this guy behind us. You would not believe this. It was still cold, okay? It was like 6-7 degrees Celsius. Guy behind us, shorts and t-shirt golfing.
I have no time for that. Like,
that's crazy.
It's stupid. I mean, it was nice. It wasn't that nice.
Yeah.
And nice job of you jinxing yourself out of it. Just took yourself right out of it mentally.
I know. I'm just a mental game. I screwed up. But I got a buddy I want to call out. He will remain nameless. But he just played this past week his 100th round of the year.
Wow.
Yeah. Hats off to him. Slow clap. Well done. You know who you are. He has kids. He's got a wife. He's still married. He's got a job. It's what an accomplishment. This guy's living the dream. And when he told me he hit the 100 mark, I was like, good for you. And that's also including, let's remember here in Ontario, we were shut down as the only place in the entire world that you weren't allowed to golf for one whole month. He still was able to squeeze in those 100 rounds. Good for him.
Do I know this gentleman?
No, you do not. And I won't introduce you. No, never.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't want to be introduced.
But Saturday night, I watched college football, lots of good games, talk about those. I watched the Leaf game. And then I actually switched to the boxing match. A buddy of mine said, you got to watch this Canelo versus Plant boxing match. I don't watch a ton of boxing, but if it's a big fight, UFC boxing, I'll watch it. And they were fighting for the unified belts of their weight, which I believe was super middleweight. Again, you're not going to get a lot of boxing analysis here, but the fight was good. Canelo knocked him out, I think, the 11th round, but he really just beat the guy up for the 10 previous rounds. But it made me start to think, what makes belts unified? Do you know this?
No, I don't even want to take a stab at it.
Yeah, so Canelo won, so it made him the undisputed champ. They started listing, I think there's maybe 12 undisputed champs ever. Mm-hmm. So I had to start looking this up. I'm like, what? I don't understand this completely. So there's the IBF, WBA, WBO, WBC belts. I guess they all have their own champions, but fighters can win multiple belts. And if you win three belts, you are considered an undisputed champ for your weight category, which is what Canelo did on Saturday. But then I started thinking, I'm like, how do you ever not have an undisputed champ? Because once someone becomes the undisputed champ for your weight category, and then another guy beats him, doesn't he just get all three belts and it just keeps going around in a circle? So that started boggling my mind. Mind you, it's like 1:30 in the morning. I'm now drinking a rye and Coke and I'm on the Google machine trying to figure this all out. So it turns out, I guess, each of those organizations that have these belts, they decide if they don't like who you're going to fight next, they can take your belt away from you. So example, let's say Canelo's going to fight, picks whoever, Joe Blow, and the WBA says, you know what? We don't like Joe Blow as your next opponent. Therefore, we're taking away your belt. Now he's only got two. I think that's what it is.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I know like Tyson Fury has two. He's the WBA or WBC world champ. And then he's got Ring Magazine, something like that, world championship.
Yeah, there's a couple others out there, but the big four I mentioned. So, but then I started thinking more. And you know what makes individual sports, I don't want to say exciting, but makes people a little bit more interested in them, is if someone from your country is involved in it. So take boxing, golf a lot, tennis. It just becomes a bigger story if you have someone in the mix or in the top of that sport. So for example, Canelo's Mexican. I think all of Mexico watched this fight, apparently. Like, it was the biggest thing ever. And it made me think, if it was a Canadian guy going for the undisputed championship, I think it would be massive here in Canada.
Well, it brings me back to when we were talking about the Olympics, right? Like, these are a lot of sports that we aren't typically watching regularly. But when there's a Canadian in contention,
right,
you can't help but pay attention and watch.
Throw the soccer in the mix as well, right?
For some. For me, I'm there. I'm tuning in.
Oh, no, I, you know what, Mike? I totally agree. And I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was, I'm sure there's massive boxing fans. And,
oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
Yourself and I are massive golf fans. But for the fringe sports watcher, when the individual is Canadian, for our example, I think it just brings more attention in the country. It's kind of cool to follow. And I mean, I remember when GSP was the biggest thing in UFC and he sold out Rogers Center for a fight and I went to it. It was amazing. But, you know, once he left, I feel like it kind of died down in Canada for the fair weather fans.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when Rocky Balboa hung it up, me and my Italian brothers, we kind of lost some love for the boxing game, but that's what happens.
I forgot. Yeah, you're a big Rocky guy. You're a big Rocky guy.
Absolutely. But I had a fedora.
I could see you in a fedora. You could be a fedora guy.
I think I'm a few years away from fedora wearing, but I do like the, what do they call them, like the newsboy caps, like they wear in Peaky Blinders. Got a couple, yes, of those. Those are nice in winter.
Yeah, they keep the head a little warm.
Yeah, yeah.
New fashion coming out for Mike this winter. Keep a lookout on his Instagram page. He'll be posting pictures. But hey, let's get into some sports. So stick around. We got our T5 coming up right after the break. We will start our T5 with the game of the week, which was between the Ravens and the Vikings. Baltimore is trying to establish themselves as one of the top teams in the AFC, but quickly got down 17-3 to Minnesota and had to crawl their way back to force OT before winning it with a Justin Tucker 36-yard field goal. Mike, did you see Minnesota giving the Ravens this tough a time?
Honestly, I didn't. As much as it pains me to say, Minnesota is kind of a sneaky team this year. They're fairly competitive in most games. They hang around, and you know they're not as good defensively as we've seen in the past few years, but they do have a lot of weapons offensively. Dalvin Cook, obviously, is one of the top running backs now that he's back in full health. He had another big game. Justin Jefferson, another one, wide receiver. So the Vikings are competitive, right? And they got out to the early lead. They were up 24-10 at one point there in the second half. And then things changed. Obviously, Lamar kind of took over.
Big time.
Three straight touchdown drives to get the game tied up. And, you know, was really doing everything with his arm and with his legs and basically put the Ravens back into it and forced overtime.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson is awesome to watch. 266 yards passing, three TDs, two interceptions. Who cares? It's just exciting. Every time he's on the field, you got to watch him. Every play, you don't know what he's doing. I was watching with a couple guys and we were just trying to guess each play. Is this going to be a throw or is he just going to run it himself? But no matter what, he's going to make exciting right down to the end. He can quickly drive his team down the field. And in this case, there was some urgency going down 17-3 and continuing to be down into the second half. They had to figure out how are they going to get back in this game. It was the third OT game for both teams. I thought that was unusual. You don't see a lot of OT games, both of them 1-1 going into this one. And then it was really a long overtime as well. Mm-hmm. Neither team could get anything going. I kept waiting for Lamar to make a great pass or break out a long run and get themselves into field goal range. I think it was 16 seconds left when Tucker made the kick just to get it. You know, there were some bad penalties on the Baltimore side that might have hurt them. But Baltimore's issue, the thing holding them back from really being a top contender or the contender in the AFC, is their defense. And it's been hurting them, I feel like, all year. And Lamar and that offense has really had to climb back. You see them going for a lot of fourth downs, more than most teams. I mean, I'm not watching every second of every game, but Baltimore goes for it on fourth down a lot. And I think it's because Harbaugh's like, I don't trust my defense.
And when was the last time you could honestly say that about a Ravens defense? They have been the staple of the Ravens' success for so many years. That is what you need from your elite superstar quarterbacks. When the chips are down and the ball is in their hands, they can make the necessary plays to get you back into the game or take over a game. And Lamar has demonstrated that numerous times over the course of his career, numerous times this season. And if the Ravens are going to go anywhere this year, is probably going to be because of him.
I agree. I don't think the team overall is what you would call a top contender. They're definitely contenders, but a top contender in the AFC or even the entire NFL. But he could drag them there. He could drag them by himself. That was his 10th game in his career of over 100 rushing yards. I mean, there's a lot of running backs out there that would die for that stat.
Yeah, some guys don't even have that in you know, in their career of 2-3 seasons, 1,000 yards, and this guy has it from 10 games. But, and I think, you know, as we transition more NFL talk, the point I'll make, just to touch on what you've said, is that realistically in the AFC, I can't pick one team that is, okay, you know, this team after, what are we now, 9 weeks, this team is the top tier. And I think we'll get into that more with, you know, T2 here, but the AFC is an interesting puzzle right now.
Yeah, well, let's move there right now, Mike. And it was an underdog day in the NFL Week 9 with upsets all over the board. And that will be our T2. The Cowboys, Bills, Saints, Raiders, and Bengals lost as favorites, which is now making us question if these teams are for real or have been faking us out the last few weeks. while both the Packers and Cardinals were missing their QB1s, but Arizona won while Green Bay was only able to get the backdoor cover. Mike, do you want to start with Aaron Rodgers' take or with the Bills only 6 points?
You decide.
Give me your Aaron Rodgers take.
I'm not going to divulge too much into it. I think enough's been said. All I will say is it was a very disappointing week. Obviously, from the news, he tested positive. You're disappointed anytime someone on your team tests positive, obviously. Then the news about not being vaccinated. I mean, you know, what I will say to that is everybody has their own choice to make. It's their decision what they choose to do. That stuff doesn't bother me. But the comments that were made on Friday on the Pat McAfee show, it was, you know, that was a little ridiculous. And yeah. I just felt very disappointed by all of it. I don't agree with the viewpoints, so.
I agree, and I'll touch on it really quickly, and we can start talking about what actually happened in that Packers game after. But
yep.
I think it was stupid, unprofessional, dangerous, arrogant, and I actually think he should be suspended. And that's all I really want to say about that. I mean, obviously not a Packers fan, but really I don't think it matters if it was anybody. I mean, if it was Austin Matthews as a Leafs fan, something like that needs to be addressed, both the player and the team. But, however, Green Bay should be a little bit worried. I mean, I don't think Jordan Love showed them anything to be excited about if this is Aaron Rodgers' last year or last 2 years as a Packer. I don't think that Love was able to get the offense moving. They seem to be a little disorganized. Some of the players seem to be talking amongst themselves on the field and sidelines where there might have been questions if they were not too pleased with how Jordan was playing. As a Packers fan, where's your confidence level with Jordan Love?
Yeah, I don't know if it's because I've gotten calmer as I've gotten older, but you know what? You can't make a fair assessment of him after one game. It's not enough. It's not fair to him. I think there were times in the game where he looked like he has something, and other times, yeah, he didn't look so good. But that was to be expected. If you were putting it on him to go into Kansas City and win by himself, that was unrealistic from the get-go. I think a couple things hurt the Packers. The pass protection throughout the game, they couldn't handle Kansas City. And Kansas City was blitzing a fair amount. And the one thing on Jordan there, he didn't flinch. You know, he stayed in there and was able to try and move the offense. So I like that. I just think that the game plan, I don't know, it seemed off offensively. Defense was fantastic. The defense played great, gave them a great opportunity to win. You know, if that's a different circumstance Rodgers is playing, it's probably a blowout. That's how well the defense played. Special teams cost Green Bay. Two missed field goals. That's 6 points right there. And the muff punt that hit off of his foot. I can't remember which player it was now, but it hits off his foot. Kansas City gets a field goal out of it. So realistically, there's a 9-point swing. You know, they hit those two field goals and don't concede. We're talking, what, a 13-10 win. So I would like to have seen a little bit more of Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon running the ball. But not a great performance, but I can't, you know, pass judgment on Jordan Love after one game.
Don't worry, Mike. They'll bounce back. You'll be fine. But I wanted to, I know you mentioned that kind of odd special teams play. Another odd special teams play yesterday, as we move into some of the upsets that happened, was in the Dallas Cowboys game. Did you see the punt that kind of just went over the play of scrimmage and then it hit the defender and it was picked up?
Yeah, I saw it in the highlights later. I didn't see it live.
So it was a weird scenario where the Broncos were punting. The Cowboys blocked it, but it went over the line of scrimmage, touched another Cowboy player. So therefore, it's a free ball. It's anyone's ball. And the Broncos were able to recover it and get good field position after just having to punt it. The Broncos absolutely beat down the Cowboys, which was sad to see. They were up 19-0 at one point, and it was a huge spread for any of you gamblers there picking on the Cowboys. The Cowboys played a great game 2 weeks ago with Cooper Rush as their QB, and it looked like this team was kind of like, all right, we got our starting quarterback back. We can take our foot off the gas now. We'll coast. We'll just win all the games now because we are good enough to win with a backup. Now that we got Dak, forget about it. But I still think the Cowboys will be fine in the NFC East in the long run here, but disappointing loss for the Cowboys.
I think every good team, and I say that with, you know, confidence that Dallas is a good team, has one of these games a season, right? They've been so good through the first seven games, even the loss to Tampa Bay. We've talked at length about that. They have looked good all seven games they played. Teams are bound to have one of these bonehead games that don't make sense and you lose. Ideally, you know, it doesn't happen at home, but it's against a non-conference opponent, non-divisional opponent. So at the end of the day, it's probably not going to matter in the grand scheme of things for Dallas. And, you know, gives them an opportunity to clean some things up and get back on track this week. So for them, I think, you know, you kind of put this one to bed, get past it, and get back into things. And it probably isn't going to matter in a couple weeks, honestly.
No, their upset wasn't as bad as some of the others. The Buffalo Bills, I mean, you can chalk that up as just kind of looking past the Jags, but it was bad. I mean, only getting 6 points, losing to them. I think they need to be a little bit worried about the Patriots now. Bills 5-3, Patriots 5-4, right on their heels. You know, they're going to play each other. Bills always have trouble against them. So Buffalo didn't look good, but I have confidence in Josh Allen. And then the Bengals, truth is, they kind of had one shining game about 2 weeks ago against the Ravens, put them to 5-2. Instead of taking that next step to be a legitimate contender in the AFC North, it was back to life and back to the basement with two straight losses. But you got to give, you know, Baker and the Browns credit. They played well without OBJ. Maybe he was the problem. Seems like they play a little bit better without him.
Yeah, first to touch on the Bills game, I'm a little concerned about Buffalo offensively. Did not look very good the previous week against Miami coming off the bye. I know right. They scored some points late, but really didn't look very convincing in that game. And then, you know, Jacksonville, the game 9-6, I mean, whatever. So this is 2 weeks in a row now for the Bills where they need to clean some things up and get back on track. I think they have enough weapons to do that. And they, too, will probably be fine. But to your point, New England looks better and better as time goes on here this season. So they will be a threat for them. I think in the end, the Bills probably still have enough there to get through. But New England's knocking on the door. You know, hats off to the Browns. Great game, great performance. Picking off Burrow, returning it all the way for a touchdown on the opening drive. I mean, that kind of set the tone from there. And it was pretty much all Cleveland from there on out. And now for them too, you know, for the Bengals, this is 2 weeks in a row where they've had an opportunity to, you know, stake their claim, and they've blown it, and they're now 5-4. And now they are into the thick of things, not only in their own division, but in the conference when they had a real opportunity to establish themselves as a top tier team.
Where do you think OBJ goes?
Oh, I said Raiders. When the news came out last week that he was going to be waived, I'll stick with it. It all depends here. If he clears waivers, then I don't understand fully if he becomes like a free agent or somebody's on the hook for that $7.5 million. If he's picked up on waivers, I think the cap hits there.
Yes.
If he passes it,
he's cleared and can sign.
Okay. So I don't see anyone picking him up on waivers. Who knows at $7.5 million, but I don't know. I think Raiders.
How about this one? It would be a wild one.
Okay.
Cincinnati Bengals. Make them just the LSU of the Midwest, I guess, in Ohio there. With all that LSU connection, put them out there on the opposite side of Chase and then just have Burrow tossing balls like they're down in the bayou.
The only knock I have on that is they have a pretty good trio of receivers in Cincinnati with T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. But look, if you're getting him for like $1 million and he wants to go there, okay. I mean, it's another, you know, it's another quality receiver. But I don't know. I could see a team like Vegas taking a shot at him. Some team that's kind of in the playoff mix that needs some help at receiver. There's been a lot of chatter from the Rams. I think that's the last thing any of us want in the NFC, to see the Rams get another big piece. But we'll see what happens.
The last team I just wanted to call out here in the NFL was the Cardinals. Huge win for them. It was announced late in the afternoon that Kyler Murray would not be playing. Colt McCoy jumps in. Great Texas QB, great Texas name, Colt McCoy. Love it. He keeps them at the top of the NFC West with the Rams after they got steamrolled by the Titans. So good job by the Cardinals to get that win without their QB1.
Yeah, James Conner, a big game for the Cardinals, obviously. Two rushing touchdowns, a receiving touchdown. Edmonds goes down and Conner kind of takes over from there, both in the passing game and the run game. So he's found a home in Arizona and he's doing real well. The only other point I want to make now, San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan is starting to get a lot of boo birds from fans, some calling for his head. You know, this guy's been touted as this great offensive genius, great head coach. And realistically, Stark, he's in his fifth season with San Fran and they have one winning season. They had that one run to the Super Bowl in 2019. You know, three losing seasons previous and on pace for a losing season this year. And I don't know, the shine seems to have worn off a bit on the Kyle Shanahan sights in San Fran, at least for now. We'll see what happens.
Who did they beat in the NFC Conference Championship that year? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Okay, we'll move on then. Don't worry about it.
Good.
It is almost the playoffs and bowl season for college football with 4 weeks left, and our T3 will break down what we saw this past week. Well, the AP Top 25 is out, and Georgia, Cincinnati, Alabama, and Oklahoma hold the top four spots. We are not sure what the playoff picture will look like come Wednesday when it is released, but we know it won't include Michigan State, as the number three school in the country fell to Purdue, which now opens up the Big Ten. Mike, start us with the state of your conference and who you like for the four playoff spots.
Good question. I don't love what the committee came out with and putting Alabama 2 last week in the initial ranking. Obviously, there's a ton of bias there. And it kind of stems to what we've been saying week after week. These teams are in these top end of the table here. Need to win big and win convincingly. And that's the problem with Cincinnati, right? Their opponent, their schedule is not a strong schedule. So that has hurt them in the eyes of the playoff committee. So we'll see what happens this week. This is going to continue up until Sunday, December 5th, when the final top 25 is released. And there we will know who the four playoff teams are going to be. But in the Big Ten, I mean, it's kind of open on the east side. Ohio State wins again. Michigan State loses. Michigan wins. Big game this week, Michigan and Penn State for the east side. We'll see. I still think Ohio State is the team to beat on that side of things in the conference. And Wisconsin, my Badgers, 5 wins in a row, climbing up the west.
I don't think too much is actually going to change this week when it is revealed. I think we're going to see Georgia, Bama. I got Oregon and Ohio State as my four. I think Bama's in if they don't lose a game. So what I think the committee is doing is they're putting Bama in there knowing that eventually Bama and Georgia are going to have to play, right? It's going to be in the SEC championship game. And if Bama wins, then they got two teams with one loss. They're both in. If Georgia wins, Bama's got two losses and they're out. So I think what the committee is doing is saying to Bama, you're in, but you got to prove it come the end here before things really shake out. So I don't think they're going to keep them out of that top four until that time. Oregon played really good on Saturday night, beating a rival in Washington. 26-16 was actually a really good game if you were watching. But with no competition in the Pac-12, I think they're going to cruise to just this one loss season and be in the top four. So I think they're going to be in. They're going to want a team from the West in. That's who it's going to be. Ohio State, let's remember, they were ranked before the season. They were one of the top teams. Their only one loss, Oregon, top three team. So that's not too bad to do. They got a chance to just walk right through Big Ten win that championship, I think they're going to be in as well. It was a close game against Nebraska on Saturday for them, but C.J. Stroud, he had 405 passing yards, lifted his team to victory, really took over. Heisman, I think I talked about that last week. But I do want to call out one of our friends, one of our teams that we mentioned last week. We're talking about jinxes already. Mike, I think we jinxed Wake Forest, man. I think we did it. Talked about them being, you know, undefeated, but maybe more of a basketball school. Then they go out there and they lose to another basketball school in North Carolina. It was too bad. We would have had a nice story, but I think that's how it's going to shake out here. I think those top four is going to be there. I think the Oklahoma is going to be in the mix. You can consider them. Michigan, obviously, going to have to beat Ohio State, but I think the committee's already got it wrapped up.
So who are we screwing over this week?
We got to pick someone. I got a couple names. Don't worry. We'll get into it a little bit later.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think, you know, with Michigan State losing to Purdue, they were third in the football playoff rankings. So that obviously drops them down. AP has them in 9 for this week. Ohio State could sneak up into that top four, as you've mentioned, once we get the football playoff standings, top 25. So we'll see. I mean, it's still a wild run here, the last 3 weeks of the season. Lots to play for, and then we get into the conference championship games.
Do you like Oregon or Oklahoma?
It's a good question. I mean,
both won loss, both got a chance to win their division or conferences. Not the greatest conferences, but coming out as a winner in a Power 5, they got a chance to at least sniff the top four.
Yeah, I lean towards Oklahoma. I think the Big 12 is obviously a lot better than the Pac-12. I just think that the competition's a little heavier there. I go with the Sooners.
It'll be exciting. Right down to the wire. It'll be fun to watch. So get locked in, and then we'll jump right into bowl season, which is some of the funnest time to watch meaningless games right around the holidays and betting on schools you've never even heard or seen before. So look out for that. Now, in the market of Toronto, the media, it's up and down, and the fan base can be emotional. But do you blame us? So the Maple Leafs will be RT4. Toronto has now won 5 in a row after losing 4 in a row, and all is good in Leafs land. The core four of Tavares, Matthews, Marner, and Nylander are scoring and scoring a lot as naysayers are quieting down for now. Now, it wasn't just that they won 5 in a row that making people get a little hyped up here. It's how they won. It's who they beat. They beat Vegas, Tampa Bay, and Boston at the end of that 5 winning streak there. 3 teams that have cup aspirations this season. 3 teams that the Maple Leafs have not played in almost 2 years. It was a test. It was a little bit of a worry kind of part of the schedule looking back, especially during that 4-game losing streak, saying to yourself, oh man, we got Vegas, we got Tampa Bay Cup champs, you got Boston coming into town. We know how Boston does here in Toronto. So I think there was some angst, but you know, hats off to the Maple Leafs. They outscored those opponents over those 5 games, 19-9 during that winning streak. That's more like the Maple Leafs team that we're kind of used to.
Feeling okay?
I'm feeling okay.
You got a big smile on your face. So we had the pinkish hue last week. We got the beaming Starkman smile this week. Things are good in the world of Ian Starkman and his Leaf fandom. As I've said, man, it's early. Relax. It'll be fine. And sure enough, here we are, 5 wins in a row. All is well in the world of blue and white.
You called it. I mean, the game against Tampa Bay on Thursday, it was the Andre Vasilevskiy, Jack Campbell show. Both these goalies stood on their heads, played great. Vasilevskiy is just a beast. And you know what? I mean, I watched, obviously, a lot of the playoff run last year, but when they're playing the Leafs, you just seem to pay attention more. This guy is massive. When he gets down that butterfly, his legs cover the complete bottom half of the net and even higher because he's so tall and big. I mean, he's on his knees and his head still above the crossbar. Great goalie, but Jack played even better. Soup, as everyone was yelling at him on Thursday and Saturday night. He got the win in OT, but it was John Tavares, tied it up late. I was shocked that we were able to score on Vasilevskiy there. To get that goal to force overtime was great. And then to win it in overtime on the penalty against Tampa Bay, Hedman, and then Nylander potted that one in. It was great. Saturday night against Boston, it was a case of too much offense against a team that's missing some key pieces. Let's be honest. The Bruins, what did they always have that held down the Leafs and all those playoff runs? Was an amazing decor led by Chara that was able to shut down any sort of offensive play that the Maple Leafs play. Well, that wasn't the case on Saturday night because the Bruins don't have those guys anymore. They got Charlie McAvoy. That's great. You know, he's a good player, great offensively, but he's not shutting down Matthews and Tavares and Nylander. I mean, Toronto's last 13 goals, all scored by the core four. I mean, that's why they get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, you want your top players producing, and, you know, they've been driving the bus here for the last 4 or 5 games. I mean, the play of Jack Campbell, I think that's important to note too, right? He has been so solid. Goals against under 2, save percentage 936 so far, 9 wins already. A good guy. I like these good stories. And like I said, I like this guy and I want to see him do well. And, you know, they're flying right now. 4 games this week, some very winnable games. And
that concerns me, though. That concerns me. I mean, Mrazek's going to be out for 4 weeks now. They got LA, Philly, Calgary, Buffalo this week. Winnable games. 3-1 would be ideal. But you don't want to take a step back and you don't want to lose some of the momentum you just gained against these other teams.
Man, just enjoy it. They're going to keep rolling. They're going to keep rolling.
I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to watch the game tonight. I'm going to enjoy it. I always do. You know, sometimes there's some yelling from the basement, but that's okay. Don't worry about it. Now, truth is, Mike and I are not the biggest NBA fans. We don't follow it too close, but we were called out for not talking Raptors after their hot start to the season. So this week, they have made our T5. The Toronto Raptors are 6-5 on the season and have played some great team basketball this year as they get used to not having Kyle Lowry on the squad. Pascal Siakam returned to the lineup this weekend and will add another threat offensively to this young team. Now, I find the NBA, Mike, that really first-round picks are so important compared to other sports. They seem to make that immediate impact and can take that team from a mid-tier team to a next-level team if that player becomes a superstar. And these players in the NBA that are first-round picks, lottery picks, if you want to even go even closer in on the details of it, they become superstars a lot quicker. And that's what Scotty Barnes is hoping to be for the Raptors. He's become a huge talking point in Toronto. He seems to be fitting into the culture that Masai is building with the Raptors. He's saying all the right things. He's buying into whatever system Nick Nurse has that they want him to play. And he's playing it well. I just think that him alone with this team might not be what this Raptors team has in hopes of making playoffs and really going on a run.
Well, anytime you lose, you know, the most popular player, the face of the franchise, Kyle Lowry leaving the team, obviously, in the offseason, you don't replace that easily on the court, off the court, what those level of players bring to an organization. So it's, you know, I don't know if transition is the correct word or however you want to describe it, but it's going to be different, right? And the players on the team will continue to establish themselves. The new faces will chip in and they've already started and they're producing well. Locking up Masai long term was a significant piece of business. I think we touched on that previous and the job he's done and continues to do. So there's a lot to be positive about here with this Raptors team, and, you know, off to a good start. And again, like hockey, lots of games ahead of them. So the fact that they're playing at home this year as well, that certainly helps. The crowd.
Oh, big time.
Raptor crowd is second to none.
One of the best.
Even if you're not super engaged in the NBA, Raptor games are a hell of a lot of fun. So
it's entertaining. It's entertainment Raptors, but it looks as though Van Fleet has kind of become that new Kyle. He's the veteran ball handler. Obviously the one that probably controls the dressing room, but I don't think he's a superstar in this league. Neither is Siakam. And they need that it guy, which I guess they're hoping Barnes to be. Now, I want to go back because obviously they did not take Jalen Suggs in the draft, who everyone kind of thought they were going to take. Big Jalen Suggs fan here because I had Gonzaga in the Final Four when he hit that half-court shot for the win. But in Masai, we trust. Obviously, he had his reasons for picking Barnes. Now, the Raptors, it's early, but I just want to lay this out. It's early. Mike always says it's early. Raptors sit eighth in the conference, which is a good start for them. The Eastern Conference is more of a top-heavy conference. 76ers, Heat, and Nets look to be the top three teams. But my concern is the Raptors will go back to what they kind of were before Lowry, Kawhi, just more of a middle-of-the-pack team. I mean, the Bucks and Celtics, they're off to slow starts. Atlanta Hawks, who had a great run last year, they're working out a bit. They're going to get back into fixing out their situation, and they'll be back to probably being a top team. I'm fearful that it could be a rough year for the Raptors. I'm pulling for them. Make some noise. If you don't make noise on the court, Masai, make some noise off the court by bringing in some big names. I'm fearful, though, that this could turn into a rough year, a rebuilding year.
Well, time will tell. You know, I think in the past, NBA, you've seen in the playoffs, as you mentioned, you know, it can be top heavy with your division leaders, and teams will often make playoffs with losing records, right? It all depends what happens in the conference. But I think that they're a better team than some people will let you believe at this point. And, you know, I think they're going to continue to be competitive as they have been through the start of this season and, you know, make a real run for the playoffs. So, Mr. Skamura, Skamura Realty Group.
We hope you're happy.
You keep us on our toes, my friend.
Now, speaking of being on your toes, I was on my toes all week with my football picks. In week 9, I got the win. I pulled it off. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. I had to check my phone multiple times. I beat Mike 3-1. Mike had Indianapolis on the Thursday nighter over the Jets, but I took Cleveland, Arizona, and Tennessee, and now the season series is led by Mike 22-14. I'm making up that gap a little bit, and I get the first pick this week. But let's first check out the games that we'll be selecting from. We're starting on Thursday night with Baltimore -7 at Miami. And the 1 o'clock on Sunday, the New England Patriots -2.5 at home against Cleveland. The Sunday afternoon game, the LA Chargers -2.5 at home against Minnesota. And then the Sunday nighter, Kansas City -2.5 going into Las Vegas. And I will be picking first, Mike. I'm going to go with a team we actually just talked about and how well they played offensively, struggled defensively. But I'm not really picking the Baltimore Ravens -7 because I think the Baltimore Ravens are amazing. Miami's just brutal. Tua's going to be out still. They can't get a win. They're going right back to the basement. So based on that, I'll take Baltimore -7.
The way you were talking there, I thought you were going to say, I'm not taking Baltimore -7. I was like, oh. Enjoy that 3-1, pal, because it ain't happening again. With my first pick, I'm going to go with the... Who am I going to go with? LA Chargers -2.5 at home against the Vikings.
Is that because you like the Chargers or hate the Vikings?
Both.
Actually, I thought Herbert played very well, so that was a good one. Now, the Sunday nighter scares me, so I'm going to leave it to you. I'm going to go to the 1 o'clock game. I think New England's back. Cleveland played very well against Cincinnati. We talked about that. They were good, but this is New England at home. They only need a field goal to win. I think the Patriots are back, so I'll take New England -2.5.
Okay. I like the way the Browns played this week, so I'm okay with that. So that leaves me the Sunday nighter. I'm going Las Vegas Raiders +2.5.
I knew you were going that way. That's why I left it for you because I wanted Kansas City. I'm just outsmarting you here. I'm fire. So this week I got Baltimore -7. Mike's got Miami in that game. I got New England -2.5. Well, Mike has Cleveland. Mike took the favorite in the LA Chargers -2.5. Well, I get Minnesota. And on the Sunday nighter, I got Kansas City -2.5, while Mike has the Raiders. But that wraps up our T5. We have a short break, and then we're going to play Would You Rather. Now, Mike, we're back. I just wanted to ask you a question. I had it in my notes. I meant to ask it to you when we were talking NFL football, so I'm going to ask it now. We talked about Jordan Love and how bad he was in his first game, or not too great. It made me think, do you remember Aaron Rodgers' first game? How did he do after taking over for Favre? Was it after Favre left? Did Favre get injured? What's the scenario?
He came in a game against Dallas in Dallas. And Favre, I believe, was injured. I think he left the game injured. And Rodgers came in and played. You know, I think at that point we were down, losing the game. So he looked okay. He had a touchdown and interception. Not the most convincing of performances, but showed some flashes there. And that was his first real thrust into the game.
Now, did he get the start the next week, or they go back to Favre?
No. Favre started every game when he was in Green Bay.
That's right. He holds the record, right?
He does.
I should have known that. Well, see, there's some positive light at the end of the tunnel there. Maybe Love will be, you know, there'll be a Love jersey hanging behind you in about 10 or 15 years.
Later. I hope so.
Now, listen, Would You Rather is a game that I'm now seeing everywhere. Everywhere I see it, people are playing Would You Rather in different shows and all that. Did we copyright this, Mike?
I have no paperwork, so.
I know. Damn.
Did your son? He started it, so he gets the royalties.
He should get the royalties, but it's perfect time for a quick shout out to my boys, actually. The two of them combined for 5 goals in hockey this weekend. Very excited for them. Some cash flowing their way from their papa, who likes to hand out the dollar bills for goals. But it prompted a would you rather from my mother-in-law. Would you rather they score goals every weekend or bring home A pluses from school?
Oh, that's please. An easy one.
We know the answers to that, mother-in-law. Come on. But let's get into our sports would you rathers, and we'll start with this one. With the NFL missing a few high-profile QBs and the NHL missing the top goalie in the game, it begs the question, would you rather a backup QB or a backup goalie?
Are you asking what I would rather be?
You're probably a backup goalie.
I'm going to say backup goalie, and the reason for that is I believe there's more games over the course of a season in hockey. There's far less pressure involved. You know, you're playing a Tuesday night on the West Coast in a 4-game swing. You know, you lose it, you win, whatever, get to overtime, get to a shootout. No big pressure, right? There's 82 games to play. Where a backup quarterback, they're going in and there's 17 games. The losses hurt a little more. So I think there's a little less pressure going in as a backup goalie, so I will take that.
For me, it's backup goalie as well. I completely agree with what you said. I feel like teams play harder. They focus in more defensively when they have their backup goalie in. Plus, they're used to seeing him around at practices. He plays 10 or 15 games a year anyway. If the starter goes down, you can make it work with them. Figure it out. For football, if your starter is down for a few weeks, it could end your season. The throws are off. He doesn't know the nuances of the plays or the way the wide receiver moves a certain pattern. There's a reason these guys are clipboard holders, and I think that's why backup quarterbacks scare me a lot more. Number 2, since we last talked, Mike, the Atlanta Braves won the World Series. Congrats to AA and the Braves on that. But as we look to next MLB season, the two World Series teams, the question is, would you rather be the Atlanta Braves next season or the Houston Astros?
I'd rather be the Atlanta Braves. Easier division. You know, they've proven that they can beat the teams come the playoffs. And I think we said that with a lot of sports. Once you're in, anything is possible. Braves prove that in baseball. They're going to have an increased payroll this year. They got some big free agents to bring back. Obviously, Freeman, Rosario, Soler, Peterson. Anthopoulos has already said there's going to be more money to use. If they can bring back, I don't know, 3 of those 4 guys, all 4 somehow, I think the Braves put themselves in a beautiful position to not just only win their division, but be back in the heavy playoff conversation in the National League. So I'm going with the Braves.
I'm going to follow suit. I'll pick Atlanta as well. They won. Spirits are high. They will welcome Acuña Jr. back into the mix and hopefully be able to attract some high prices high price arms is what they need, which they need in the front of that rotation, which was kind of missing it even through the playoffs. It was evident that their bullpen was really holding them together. They need starters. I think Alex will be able to go out and get those. Freeman, as you mentioned, free agent, but he said multiple times, Atlanta's his home. I can see him working out a deal to stay there. Then on the other side, you got Houston. Their team looks a little divided, I guess. I would assume Greinke will either retire after this year or look to move on to a different spot if he is going to play. Carrera will leave for big money, which will only leave Altuve and Bregman from those cheating teams. And I wonder if they had not cheated. Let's go back here. Let's say Houston didn't cheat and they ended up getting the World Series but lost to the Dodgers. It is what it was. I think maybe they might have been able to win two World Series since then because they wouldn't have had this around. They maybe would have been able to keep Springer, keep that group together, keep a few of those arms around as well. So really, when you look back on it, everything kind of fell apart since that World Series win when the truth came out. For that matter, I think next year, Atlanta will be the better team. I'll take Atlanta. Now, halfway through the NFL season, and we need to know who is better. So if you're a new team joining the NFL, would you rather be in the NFC or would you rather be in the AFC?
AFC. I think we've touched on this a little bit, but you look at the NFC, you got Arizona 8-1, Green Bay, Rams 7-2, Dallas, Tampa Bay 6-2. And then there's a little bit of a fall off after that. Right now in the AFC, Tennessee is 7-2. Their running back is going to be gone for most of this run through the playoffs, maybe back for playoffs. They're a 7-2 team. They're leading the conference right now. Ravens are 6-2. Then a plethora of teams have 5 wins. Like I said, there's no team right now after 9 weeks in the AFC that I look at and say, these guys are the AFC champs until somebody proves otherwise. So, you know, you get 4 or 5 wins, you're in the mix right now. So the teams that are around 4 wins, 5 wins, they are still very much alive in the AFC. And for that reason, you know, NFC's top heavy. I'm going to AFC.
Sounds like you don't have any faith in Adrian Peterson.
Maybe 7 years ago.
This is tough. And instead of picking the way you did, who the harder teams to beat, I'm picking the AFC because I think they have more bad teams. And if I'm an expansion team coming in, I need to pick up a few wins. These are the teams to do it against. There's 4 bottom feeders that are staying down for years to come. Jets, Dolphins, Jags, and Texans. Put me with those teams. A few wins my first year. Start to build it up. In the NFC, I think you're right. I'm scared of the Cowboys, Packers, Bucks, Cardinals, Rams. Plus, the only really bad team in the NFC, the Lions. I'd rather stay in the AFC. I think I can get more wins there. Don't shake your head at me. I know what you're thinking. Go ahead, say it.
No, I got nothing to say.
Okay. All right. Well, we've been agreeing on all 3 here. So last one, let's see if we agree. But listen to this story in the PGA Tour from this week. Victor Hovland won the Worldwide Technology Championship at Mayakoba this weekend for back-to-back wins for Hovland at this event. Now, the interesting twist came on Wednesday when Danny Lee asked Victor if he could take a swing on the range with his driver. The nice Norwegian said, sure. And then Lee snapped it in half after one swing. Hovland was forced to use James Hahn's backup driver, which was a few inches shorter than his. No problem. He won by 4 strokes. So the question is, would you rather use someone else's driver or would you rather use someone else's putter?
It's a good question. That's a hell of a story. For me, I would pick driver. I think more or less drivers for the most part are very similar. With a putter, you know, the weight, the feel, you got to get that stuff right. And I say that, I mean, I switched from a mallet to a blade putter this season. And 6 months later, I'm still trying to figure it out. But that's the thing with putters, right? It's all touch and feel. And if you don't have that, you're going to be all over the shop. Drive for show, putt for dough.
Now, you also got to go and Google and look at Hovland's putter, because he uses an old, old putter that he's maybe had years and years and years. It's like a small little mallet. It's like a real L-shaped diagonal down, but he putts lights out with it. Now, I am so into my clubs that both of these would be tough for me on a Sunday at my course using someone else's driver or putter, let alone a PGA event. But I guess because they were in Mexico, they didn't have the sponsorship vans. They're usually at all the tour events. So the guys had whatever clubs they came with, and he didn't bring an extra driver. So therefore, I'm taking someone else's putter in this case. I think you can put me on a putting green for an hour and I can figure it out. Let me putt around there, figure out the weight, maybe get my stroke down. I can get it close enough and, you know, two putt most greens. Driver, if my mind is unsure where the ball is going as I stand over it, that means it's going way right before I even hit it. It doesn't matter who you are with that putter or how good you are with a putter. If it takes you six shots to get to a green, doesn't matter what your putting is going to be like. So for that matter, I need my own driver. Give me someone else's putter. Give me Happy Gilmore's hockey stick putter, and I'll two-putt myself around every green.
Counterpoint, hit three wood. You don't need to hit driver.
The par fours are 560 yards in the PGA. You got to bomb something 350 out there.
I can hit my three wood as well as some people can hit their drivers. You ask Eric Nabeta that. He will vouch for me.
You're the unique guy that can do that. Me, I can't hit a three wood for my life dependent on it, let alone on the ground or a tee. So I need that driver, baby. I need I need that sim too in my hands. It's a cheat code right down the pipe every time.
But I just think with the par threes too, you're not using a driver all 18 holes. You're using a putter all 18, unless you chip it in. Good argument though. Very interesting.
Great one. Great question. Well, hey, each week Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, I had Michigan State to cover, and they lost outright. Well, Mike took the jinx with Wake Forest, and they lost outright. Let's shake it off, Mike, and we'll start with your pick.
We're only making the casino some cash these weeks. Staying in college football, staying in my conference, the Big Ten, Michigan goes to Penn State Saturday at 12 noon. Michigan 8-1 on the season, Penn State 6-3, Michigan 5-1 against the Big Ten, Penn State 3-3. Penn State is the favored in this game right now by one. I'm taking Michigan.
You taking Michigan money line?
Oh, no, they'll cover. They're going to win. They're going to not lose by one, and they're going to win the game by multiple.
All right, so you got Michigan plus one.
Yes.
I like it. All right, I'm going to the big boys games on Sundays in the NFL with my Super Bowl Cowboys, where they were embarrassed last weekend, but I think they learned a lesson. It was lesson learning time. You know, they're all back in that beautiful, nice little practice facility, got there. They're watching their game tape, and it's lesson learning time. I don't think they're going to take anyone lightly ever again this season. They're going to look back on that loss and say, this is the reason why we won the Super Bowl. Mark my words. So it's time to take out the Atlanta Falcons. So I will take the Cowboys in Jerry's World -9 over the Falcons. You like that one, Mike?
I do. I think Dallas will respond mightily this weekend.
Well, we want to hear from you. So make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.